Recent studies reveal that boys in the United States are struggling more than ever and in ways that are deeply disturbing. In general, they do worse in school than girls, have more social problems, are less likely to attend college, and commit suicide at 5 times the rate of girls. The advent of the internet and social media have exacerbated long-standing issues such as bullying and created entirely new landmines such as sexting. In her latest book, Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Laws of Boy World, Rosalind Wiseman looks at the rapidly changing landscapes that make up the world of boys. It's published by Harmony Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Rosalind Wiseman to our show today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
After writing Queen Bees and Wannabes, your best-selling look at the world of girls, was writing about teenage boys the next logical step?
Well, actually, I wrote a book about parents in between that and wrote a young adult novel for kids. But I always felt like I needed to do something for boys because boys were constantly asking me for advice. And, you know, sometimes I could see it in their eyes that I wasn't doing right by them. I wasn't giving them good enough advice that they really felt like they could use. So I wanted to take the time to really ask boys what they needed and what they wanted.
Do you think that boy world is less understood than girl world?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, certainly with the popularity of, for better and for worse, of girls and my work and other people's work, we've spent decades before a lot of time on creating a language for girls and having them understand that in this world where they're getting some messages that are really toxic, that there's also an incredible language for them and people who want to help them, who want to advocate for them and give them power and self-agency. We don't have a similar kind of authentic language for boys about coming into their own so they can be proud of who they can be as men.
Well, teenage boys and girls have similar issues to deal with. What's an example of how they might handle the same situation in a very different manner?
Well, what happens with, many social dynamics, actually, boys and girls are in many ways quite similar because of the way power works and abusive power works in groups. But one of the ways in which I've worked with girls and had to work in some ways differently with boys was about apologies. Now, apologies are transformative to people. A genuine apology is transformative to people and relationships and communities. But we are often really stuck or have to deal with fake apologies. And for girls, when they apologize, there's a lot of words around it. But girls can really be the masters of the anti-apology. Now, boys are good at the anti-apology as well, let's be clear. But I think one of the things that is such a good example of what we don't see with boys is that boys, for example, when they want to apologize, one of the things that means a lot to them, instead of saying, I'm really sorry about what I did, which is important, but it can be just as important when you've done something really bad as a boy to share food at lunch. Like the thing that you know the other person wants and you've been horrible to them an hour before, if you give him that thing, that is a transformative apology.
Many years ago, Deborah Tannen published a book called You Just Don't Understand, in which she revealed the differences in the way adult men and women talk and why that causes problems. So do these things begin when kids are very young?
I think so. And I think that there's a legacy as we get older. And there's very particular things we can look at, which is how do we communicate when we're angry? Do we think that people will take us seriously? Do we think that we have the right to express our anger in ways that are dominating to other people and to scare other people? One of the things that, you know, with these 200 boys that I worked with for over 2 years, you know, I really liked these kids. I really, really liked them.
These are boys from the age of 4 to 12.
Fourth grade to 12th grade.
Oh, the grades.
And then I also had men in their 20s who helped me as well. And one of the things that was the hardest as a mother and as an educator was how cognizant the boys were by the time they were in high school, that they could use their power, use their height, and that they were bigger than their mothers to sometimes intimidate their mothers in arguments so that the mother would back down. Now, there's a lot of complexity around that relationship and that dynamic, but the boys absolutely, it was one of those moments where they looked at me and said, how could you not know that?
Well, how open were they with you, after all? And how aware are they of these dynamics? Aren't a lot of these things just instinctive?
I think that the boys want desperately to talk about these issues, which I know is so shocking to people. But, I mean, honestly, with these boys, there were lots of times I couldn't get them to stop talking. And they would laugh about it later. When we were coming up with the, you know, the types that I work with boys, which, you know, the entertainer, the punching bag, the fly, that, you know, these are starting places for conversation. They're not like, this is what your son or this is what a boy is. But the boys debated at length, I mean, hours and hours and hours of what they thought were the right names to talk about and what was realistic for them. So boys want to talk about these things. You just have to be able to sit and listen. You have to be able to laugh. You have to be able to be really direct with them when they say something that's completely off base and say, like, what are you talking about? Right? Like, back that up. That's ridiculous. But to say it with a baseline of respect and of interest and of acknowledgement that their life experience is their life experience and no one should and can take that away from them.
Are certain aspects of a boy's personality simply hardwired at birth? I mean, how much of all of this is nature and how much is nurture?
Yeah, sure. Well, here's the thing that I think is really important about that, because everybody is on a continuum. And then there's these parents, and parents commonly and understandably will say, people have said this to me consistently over the years. I wanted my son to be able to play with all different kinds of toys. I gave him a doll and he put the doll in a truck. And he smashed it against the wall, or he tried to light the doll on fire, or he tried to, smash all of these things. And I have two boys. They're 8 and 10. That's hilarious. They're 10 and 12. And, here's the thing. We give girls a doll, and they have these complex relationships, and they do this imaginative play. And true, some girls are like that. A lot of girls are like that. Then we get some boys or a lot of boys who are going to smash the truck. But that doesn't mean that the boy who smashes the truck doesn't experience loneliness, doesn't care about having deep friendships, doesn't care that when his friend leaves him for another friend, feels lonely and rejected. Boys have lives and they have emotions even while they're smashing the truck.
Now, the categories that you have come up with remind me of kids I knew when I was young as well. In some cases, by the way, the entertainer and the punching bag might be the same kid.
Absolutely.
Which is a whole other issue. But how has the emotional life of boys changed over the last 30 to 40 years?
Oh, gosh. I think that there are some things that are absolutely intrinsic to who we are. We want to belong to a group. Friendships makes life better. Social connection makes life better.
But then there are the kids who are in large groups of friends, and then there are the ones who have one friend.
Absolutely. And by the way, having a large group of friends does not mean that you have better friendships necessarily than the kid who has one deep friendship. And parents often will ask me about that. And absolutely, it is clear to me to have one deep friendship that you can trust is way better than having a large group of friends that you're not quite sure how they're going to act. But, there are things that boys are always going to experience: falling in love, being betrayed, holding a grudge, not knowing how to deal with it, feeling like
it's just me.
being angry and feeling like it's absolutely futile to talk to the person about it. These are things that, everybody experiences. But of course, for today, boys are experiencing things in a way in which privacy means different things to them, where, of course, every humiliation that they're going to experience is recordable and often is. And there's no way to make it. Oftentimes the mistakes that we look back as adolescents that we never would want anybody to know are absolutely public. And so when adults say to their kids anything like, well, I know what it was like when I was your age, sort of, but you better listen to what they're saying because they really might have different experiences.
Well, we didn't grow up with the internet, and we didn't grow up with all sorts of other pressure. We didn't grow up with the pop culture that is around today.
You could escape it sometimes.
You mentioned the eight social roles that you say are available to boys. Is this something you came up with?
Well,
or did the boys come up with it?
There is nothing I did in this book that the boys did not vet. Let me tell you, as a woman, even though I've taught boys and girls for 20 years, I do not perceive myself to be the expert on these things. The kids are the experts. And so whenever I write a book, but especially with something like this, making it good enough to be able to say, I've written this and asking parents to read this, I had to have boys work with me every step of the way. And a lot of that was the boys saying, Rosalind, that little thing right there, you are completely wrong. And it took them a while to trust me, to be able to tell me what I was wrong about. But they absolutely came up with the rules and those archetypes.
But don't some of those archetypes also apply to girls?
Absolutely, they do. And so this is the issue, is that, you know, in some ways, I think I would like to be able to integrate these books for boys and for girls, because a lot of these issues are about power, control, social competency. They're about conflict is inevitable, and you have to be able to manage that. You have to be able to speak truth to power. So it's all these things are integrated. What I would like, though, is that I think boys especially need to feel like there is something for them that has been written by them that is acknowledging of their lives.
How much can we extrapolate from each of the roles to predict personality characteristics in the fully formed adult?
You're asking such small questions. Well, I mean, I often look at political leaders and go,
kind of kid was he or she?
I look at the pictures of all the presidents lined up in their summits and go, because you can see how people align in terms of their power and their relative power to each other and how they're positioned in a group. I really believe that what I want for the boys and what I'm asking men to join with me about and to change the conversation about boys so that it allows men also to have more stronger relationships with the boys in their lives, of course, as women as well, is that we are able to talk to them about redefining for the boys what it means for them to be a strong, authentic man.
What are some of the trends that you found are the most worrisome to you in terms of the emotional well-being of boys today?
I am very worried about boys' cynicism and well-founded cynicism. I know that adolescents...
They're more cynical than girls?
I believe so, yeah. As a general rule, yes. I think that, we talk about adolescents going, oh, nobody understands me. But really, we need to acknowledge the hypocrisy that young people are seeing from adults in their life on a consistent basis, not just public figures, but the people, the adults in their everyday lives. And it's hard. This is a hard conversation to have. It's uncomfortable. But it really is something that I saw over and over again is the boys saying, adults are asking us to do things that they are absolutely unwilling to do themselves. Or they are saying that they are going to stop abusive power, and they will not. They capitulate to it every single time. So why would I ever say anything? Because if I do, I am alone.
And then there's the whole do as I say, not as I do thing.
Which if you really want to have credibility, right. If you want credibility with your son, you do not say things like that.
We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we will delve a little deeper into some of the stereotypes about boys. Also, we invite your thoughts. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Or you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. My guest is Rosalind Wiseman, whose latest book is Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. It is published by Harmony Books. We are back with Rosalind Wiseman. Her latest book is Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. It is published by Harmony Books. While something of a stereotype, a prevailing characteristic of boys is their inability or lack of desire to discuss their feelings and emotions with their parents, how can parents best address this topic and teach their sons a healthier way of dealing with their emotions?
Well, I mean, this is so tricky. Boys are so tricky. I mean, this is now I can really talk about this as a mom, because it sometimes feels like to get past the I'm fine, I'm good, I don't want to talk about it, put your earbuds in.
Where did you go? Out. What did it do? Nothing.
Right? To get past that is really tricky. And if there's even something wrong, it sometimes I feel like as a mother that it feels like you have like one chance to say the exact perfect thing in the exact perfect situation. Otherwise, your son looks at you like, and this is the reason that I will never speak to you again. And you just sit there like, are you kidding me with this? Right? I mean, like, you're not giving me anything. I'm trying my best here and everything I'm doing is falling flat. So that is something I can really, really relate to and empathize with other parents. It's something I deal with every day. Now, having said that, I think there's different ways in which we want to talk to our children. One is the boys made me promise that I would, so I'm now recognizing and owning, I'm doing the promise, is that they wanted me to tell parents that the moment they see them at the end of the day, or when they get into the car at the end of school day, after practice, it's like that moment that you get in the car or they see you at the house, that you don't barrage them with questions. How are you doing? What's going on? How was school? How was practice? Did you play well? Da, da, da. What the boys are saying to me is, it is so exhausting to listen to the questions. All I want to do is just chill out. And if you think about it, if your relationship with your son is moderately good, then he's going to want to decompress around you and he's going to want to relax, because no matter how good of a school is, really, it could be the best school in the world, he's got to sort of walk around with armor around, like his persona at school. So he gets into the car with you and he can relax. So it doesn't mean he gets to put in his earbuds the whole time and not talk to you. It doesn't mean he gets to be rude. It doesn't mean he gets to like listen to music really, really loud. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, actually don't ask him a lot of questions.
Well, how has the stereotype of the strong, silent man changed with this last generation? Or does it remain embedded in the culture?
I think it's absolutely embedded in the culture. I think, and this is one of the things that gives me hope about boys with all of the trouble that we see them struggling with, is that if we reach out to them, if they know, if they can see that we want to hear from them and that we are respecting their lives and we're not going to lecture them, we can be opinionated, just not judgmental, that the boys will come forward. I believe that the boys, many boys, even high social status boys, are getting to a place where they understand the consequences and the price that they are paying to be silent. They just don't know what to do about it. But once they can find support in a way that they can trust, I think the boys come forward.
We are getting some really interesting calls, but before we get to them, I just want to follow up on what we've been discussing. In the chapter you've called Your Parent Profile, you identify various types of parenting styles and describe the unique characteristics of each. Sometimes even the descriptive names you prescribe are cringe-inducing, like the bro dad.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's a bad good one. Well, I don't know, good bad. I don't know. You want me to talk about the bro dad?
Sure.
So, again, something I didn't really, really understand until the boys talked to me about this, but in many groups of boys, especially high social status boys, where athletics is very important and certain kinds of athletics that are sort of more predisposed to our, like, you know, sort of the traditional masculine culture, so that'd be lacrosse, football, but it can happen in any basketball, but it can happen in any sport. You know, it's water polo, for goodness sakes, in California. Is that there is a dad who feels that that the best way to connect with the boys, his son's friends, is to act like them, to try and be their friend. And that includes making sexual comments about the girls that the boys go to school with. It includes making comments about porn. It includes making comments about women, or, you know, pushing at them with his elbow and saying something snarky. And what is absolutely clear to me is that the boy that has this father is absolutely embarrassed and is ashamed that he has this father. And the boys feel badly for this kid, that he has this dad. This is not something that's working as a way to be a responsible parent. And dad thinks he's connecting with his kid. And right. And if he says something like, oh, I'm embarrassing you because, like, you know, all teens are embarrassed by their parents, wrong. Their child is rightfully embarrassed that they have a dad who's acting like he is 15 years old.
And then there's the glory seeker parent.
Right. So this can be moms or dads. Mm-hmm. And this is the parent that really is so focused on the outside achievements of their child that they're not focused on the internal needs of their child. And one of the things that's really for boys and for girls is that kids are not billboards of their accomplishments. They are living, breathing things who respond to how well or not, or what the pressure is of doing well. It doesn't matter what that is. And so it's important to be able to not introduce, for example, when you see somebody and they say, how are you, that you don't start rattling off the achievements of your child. First of all, it's a little boring. Frankly, as a parent, I got to tell you, we got to have other things to say than what are the accomplishments of our children. And the other part is, they are not advertisements for you. They are living, breathing people. And sometimes those achievements are coming at a very high cost, which is that the kids are exhausted and feeling like if they don't do these things, they are nothing. And so they're so scared to give it up that they get incredibly, the feeling of isolation, depression can be overwhelming.
What about the parents who listen to the kids' music, try to engage them, They think they're doing something positive.
Is that appreciated by the kids? Well, sometimes they are. I mean, kids love to say, you have terrible music, I hate your music. And parents love to say to their kids, I hate your music. But let's be clear that, you know, when I was growing up and I was listening to Prince, that is just as graphically sexual and quote unquote inappropriate as any music that the kids are listening to now. So it's, you know, and also if you don't like certain kinds of music as a parent, what I would say is do your homework before you actually have a conversation with your child about why it is, for example, disrespectful.
Now, we constantly hear about the problem of bullying. This is not just a boy problem, but is bullying different among boys than among girls? Well, it could tend to be more physical, doesn't it?
It can be. Certainly girls can be physical. And I think and girls can bully boys and boys can bully girls. It's going all different kinds of ways. I mean, I think as somebody who's spoken and written a lot about bullying is that it's really important to say to parents that not every conflict is bullying. I tend to think of it as that conflict is inevitable among people. Abuse of power is inevitable among people. And so the goal is to teach children social competency to navigate those inevitable experiences for people. Sometimes that is bullying, but it is really important to realize as a parent that not every conflict is bullying. And the other part is, for the most part, kids don't want to talk about that word because it guarantees adult involvement now.
What about the kid who is seen as an outsider, either reads a lot of books, might be gay, can have all sorts of other things that separate him from the rest of the kids? This is a problem for parents, and it's also a problem for their teachers, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, you know, if now, because and for the better, young people are really, in general, much better at being able to include gay kids in schools.
But they still say, oh,
but
that's
so gay.
But
they still say, that's so gay. They still, of course, say, don't be a faggot. I'm regularly called a faggot when I speak out about violence against women and racism issues and homophobia issues. Really, I am regularly called this on Twitter. Me, woman that I am. So, and married to a man, for whatever that's worth. So it's, what's important about this is that the word gay or faggot or any of those words are still the words that absolutely are the shortcut to marginalizing and dismissing people's opinions and their humanity as being seen as other. But the problem is that, you know, we can have gay professional sports, you know, athletes come out. We can have a lot of gay characters in our lives, but we're still using it as the shortcut to be able to demean and humiliate people. And the other thing, though, that I think is important to realize is that you can have an out football player who's an offensive lineman, and the other boys know that he can absolutely destroy them physically. But if there is a boy who is quote unquote flaunting his sexual orientation by being effeminate, there's a lot, and what is that is perceived to be, unless the adults in the school are adamant and effective at creating cultures of dignity in the school, then that kid is absolutely vulnerable to being attacked, demeaned, dehumanized by the other kids and by some of the adults in the school.
I'm glad you mentioned Twitter, because a decade ago we would have had this conversation without ever uttering the word social media. Today we could easily take up this whole conversation and more with it. Social media has been a game changer, hasn't it? What about in terms of parenting?
Well, I would like for parents to stop gossiping and being snarky on Facebook and on things like that. I don't know if that's your question. But.
Well, what about reading their kids' email or checking out their Facebook page every day to see what they're thinking?
Sure. I mean, this is something I thought a lot about because, you know, my thinking changes about these things. I don't have set, you know, my set opinion is conflict is inevitable. Dignity is not negotiable. But other than that, in order to do this work with young people and how things are changing, you've got to be able to rethink the things that you're thinking. So I did a lot of that for Masterminds. And so, for example, and this was incredible intense debates with the boys, is to say to them, you know, first of all, let me say this about technology. Parents are very focused on Facebook pages and phones, but where it's really happening, where the negative or positive social norming that is occurring on technology is in games. It is on instant messaging, or it is on whatever you want to call it, about social networking, the social environment that is happening in games whenever kids are playing online, or kids are sitting on a couch, and that's a social dynamic that is going on. Lots of those social dynamics and social norming is toxic. It is racist. It is homophobic. It is incredibly violent against women. So that is actually important. So I would like for parents to stop focusing on or saying, oh my gosh, my three-year-old can use the iPad. Oh, this is so incredible. That the minute the child starts using that kind of things, you need to start tying it to your values concretely. By the time a kid is eligible for being able to have a Facebook page or a phone, for parents today, they're going to have the social norming these kids through any kind of game. So they're going to have the foundation by the time they get there, for better and for worse.
Well, in the past, if a kid kept a diary, it was considered verboten to read your child's diary. But the kids now are revealing an awful lot about themselves, even posting photographs of themselves, sometimes indiscreetly, things that they're going to regret the rest of their lives. It's hard for a parent to ignore those things, isn't it?
Sure, it is. But I got to have us look in the mirror. I mean, parents post stuff up that they shouldn't all the time. And frankly, I think that kids are much smarter about controlling their privacy. There's a new Pew study that came out a couple months ago that actually is saying, and they do wonderful work, about kids doing a lot to maintain their privacy settings. So it's not as simple as kids are just throwing everything up online that they see. They actually, surprisingly, are often pretty discerning about what they're putting up, which is contrary, I know, to the stereotype that we have of adolescents.
I was pleased to be able to learn some new terms.
Okay.
Reading a book. What's a lax bro?
Oh, how much time do we have?
We have very little time.
You are going to get me in so much trouble. So lacrosse, oh my gosh, you did this to me, and it's 5 minutes left in the program.
No, not even 5 minutes, 2 minutes, a minute and a half.
Okay, so lax bros are people who play lacrosse compared to guys who are good at playing lacrosse. And it
is lacrosse
social,
a big sport with
huge,
kids? Not in New
huge.
York.
Huge. So it's a social culture, and it's really something that I'm talking about in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole thing about jocks who bond, and the kids are not jocks.
Right, exactly.
That kid who can't hit a foul shot.
Right. There's a lot of stuff in there, absolutely.
Since I was the humiliated kid, I was tall, and I would always be picked by strangers to play. And I'd say, no, pick the little kid first, because I didn't want to be embarrassed.
Sounds like a good strategy.
Boys are very aware of where they're going to embarrass themselves.
Absolutely, they are. Absolutely.
Now, we should point out that you will be giving a talk and signing books tonight.
I am.
That's going to be at the Trinity School at 101 West 91st Street in Columbus Avenue. Is it different when you're talking at a school than when you're talking at some other event? Do you find different kinds of questions?
Well, I the benefit and the wonderful thing about my work is a lot of people come and tell me their opinions. So I hope tonight that if people come, that I'll be there presenting this work and they'll have the opportunity to think about it. I want us to engage in this conversation and change the way we talk about boys.
And that event is at 6:30 tonight.
Yes, it is.
The book is Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests. We didn't even get to that. Girlfriends and the New Rules of Boy World. It is published by Harmony Books. And my great thanks to Rosalind Wiseman for coming on as our guest today. It's
Thank
been a real
pleasure.
Thank
you for having me. Thank you.